Good evening, welcome to, I think, part five of Hilchos Muktzah. We are towards the end. Tonight we are actually going to have the exciting, we're going to get to the exciting topic of when you could actually move all the things that we decided were Muktzah. Let's just review for a few minutes what we did last week. Last week we talked about Muktzah, two small, not so significant categories of Muktzah. One is Muktzah Machmas Isser, something that's Muktzah only because the Torah prohibits us from using it, like a shatnez jacket, a shatnez shirt. Those will be muktzah machmas iser. And what else did we say? Something that's chametz on Pesach. Why does it not have a use? After all, it's food. We all love food because it's chametz, and chametz you can't get hana'ah from. So therefore, it'll be muktzah because of the iser of chametz. As opposed to, we said, food that's not kosher is not muktzah. Why not? What could I do with food that's not kosher? I could give it to my dog. And we said that in order for food to be disqualified from being ready to be able to use on Shabbos, in other words, in order for food to be muktzah, it has to be disqualified from achilas, not kelev, but an animal that's around. Any animals that are around will make food readily mutter. So if I have hay, H-A-Y, then if there are cows, the hay is not muktzah, it's food. If there are no cows, like here in Washington Heights, then hay is muktzah. Subjective. Then last week we spoke about a different kind of category called muktzah machmas mi'us, from the word mem aleph samach, ma'as, something that's disgusting, repulsive. There's a special category of muktzah just for things that are repulsive, disgusting, like a bedpan, like a dirty diaper, like a moldy cucumber in the bottom of your refrigerator cabin, drawer. All those things are muktzah machmas mi'us. However, even though they are muktzah and you can't move a dirty diaper, we said that on the flip side, there's a special kula, a special heter, that you are allowed to move things that are repulsive. But when will that apply? Only if. When can you move things that are repulsive? If you're there to be repulsed. If you're not there to be repulsed, then there's nothing to be repulsed by. So if you have a dirty diaper in the backyard where people are not hanging around, it's muktzah there. You have to leave it there and it'll stay there. If the diaper is in a place where people are walking around, then it will be, although it's muktzah, it's permitted to move around. Why? Why am I permitted to use it? Human dignity. How do we say that in Hebrew? For kavod habrios. Kavod habrios, that was a reason that the Rabbanan didn't make the gzera of muktzah. Meaning, even though they said there's a thing called muktzah, if it's going to overstep the boundaries of human dignity, they said we will not make our iser called muktzah. That was last week. Tonight, we're going to start right now with the final category of muktzah. And after we go through the final category, we'll go to how to move muktzah. The final category of muktzah, which we did speak about in passing, is muktzah machmas chisaron kis. What's chisaron kis? Loss of your pocket. What's loss of your pocket? A financial loss. Now here, there are a few things that are a little bit tricky. Something that is very expensive does not become muktzah because it is very expensive. Something that is very cheap can be muktzah even though it's very cheap. Muktzah machmas chisaron kis. The way the Poskim define this final category of muktzah is anything that because of your concern for its financial value, you don't use for anything else. So therefore, if you have a blank notebook that you bought at the beginning of the semester, the beginning of the school year, and you don't want to just use it for other things because it could get ruined, you don't want to use it to, I don't know, use it as a paperweight, you don't want to use it to bang your little brother over the head with, you don't want to use it for other things. Why? Because it's $4 of good paper, and you don't want to waste it. So even though it only costs $4, or $2 for that matter, since you don't want to use it for another use, because of its value, that's going to be machmas chisaron kis. However, let's say you have a BlackBerry. Let's say you have a $150 BlackBerry. But you use the BlackBerry as a paperweight, you use the BlackBerry as a, what else could you use a BlackBerry for other than a paperweight? What else can I use a BlackBerry for?
A mirror?
Yes, you use a BlackBerry as a mirror to fix your tefillin, of course. Yes, you want to make sure your tefillin are directly between your eyes. I know what it's, you all know what it's like. You know what it feels like. Those bad tefillin days. So your $150 BlackBerry will not be Moksa Machmas Chisaron Kish. However, if you have somebody else who they are very particular about their BlackBerry and they would never use it as a paperweight, they saved up so many weeks just to be able to buy that BlackBerry, they're not going to use it for something else. So therefore, the BlackBerry will be Moksa Machmas Chisaron Kish. Let's go back to the source. What's the source for a mukta machmas chisaron kis because of value? There's a Mishnah in Maseches Shabbos, of course, Daf Kuf Chaf Gimel 123. Rabbi Yossi says everything, all the kalim utensils could be moved except for the masar hagadol, a large saw. I don't know what he used it for. V'yated shel macharisha, picture you're having a plow. You have a cow and a cow with a yoke over their necks. Coming back from the yoke is a bar that goes to the ground. And that in the ground you have the metal piece with the sharp edges that sort of cuts, furrows a hole in the ground. That bottom thing is what we're calling a kli that's muktza machmat chisaron kis. Why? Why is that muktza machmat chisaron kis? I understand it's muktza machmat kli shem lachta l'isr. But we're going to see soon that Mukta Machmas Chisaron Kis is going to be more severe. We'll see that in a minute. Let's see how the Rush explains. Says the Rush on that Mishnah, the reason why there's this category, and this is going to be the description. We had a definition, now we're going to have a description. The reason why things are Mukta Machmas Chisaron Kis is because you're careful with them so they don't get ruined. You're careful with them so they don't get ruined. So too, a sakin shel mila, a scalpel that's used for bris mila, the ismal shel safarin, when you have a sofer, and he uses a sharp knife to do whatever delicate things he has to do with chipping away a little bit of the letters that he didn't write well. I'm sorry, that he carves the quill, right? A sofer writes with a quill, not with a pen, but with a quill, and he has to sort of carve the edge of the feather so that he could get the right form so that it will pick up the ink from the inkwell and it will apply the ink properly to the cloth. So he has a special knife. That knife and the knife of a scalpel will be mukta machmas chisaron kis. Kevan shemakpidin, because they are careful, mila asot bahen, from doing with these things, tashmish acher, other uses. So this is the rule. Whenever you have something that because of its delicateness, value, worth, concern for financial value, you're not going to use for other purposes because you don't want it to get ruined, that makes it mukta. Now, this mukta is a very severe mukta. This mukta is, A, I cannot move it even if I need the location. I cannot move it even if I need the... even if I want to use it for an alternate use. So therefore, back to the BlackBerry. Let's say I have a BlackBerry that I don't like using to look at myself in the mirror. I don't like using as a paperweight. That BlackBerry is going to be mukta even if it's sitting on my pillow. That BlackBerry will be mukta even if it's in my way. Even if I want to use it as a paperweight, I will not be able to. Even though it's a kli, it's not like a mukta machmas gufo, like a raw potato. That we know you can't move at all. But here, even though it's a kli, since I'm worried because of its financial value, it won't be able to be moved around at all. Now, let's get into some of the details of this category of mukta machmas chisaron kis. One, how do I define whether something is this level of mukta? Meaning, I have a lamp, a nice lamp. So, am I concerned of its value? Of course, I don't want it to break. So is that going to be mukta machmas chisaron kis? Well, one of the parameters that the poskim give is that you were miyached a makom for it. What's miyached makom? You set a particular location for it. It's kept in a certain spot. So if there's a certain thing that you keep in a certain spot, that, now listen carefully, that doesn't make it Muktamach Mat Chisaron Kis. That's just a symptom of the fact that it probably is a Muktamach Mat Chisaron Kis. What's something that because of its delicateness, its value, my concern for its worth, I usually always keep in the right place? What? A driver's license. Yeah, expensive, important documents. Possibly. That sounds good.
China.
But that's not, we're not going to go there because we want to use our China on Shabbos. So we'll have to figure out why not. Maybe later we'll talk about why that won't be a problem.
A fancy vase.
A fancy vase. We'll have to talk about that also possibly. What?
A painting.
That's also something a little bit complex we'll talk about later if we get time for. But that would theoretically, that's where the person talk about this topic, but okay. Your candlesticks. That's a very good point. Your candlesticks, you don't want anyone to touch. They stay in a right specific place. And let's assume they weren't lit before Shas. That will make it more problematic. Just, let's
antique
say you...
Candlesticks.
What?
Antique candlesticks.
For show, so that might be a good example. Muktamach Mat Chisaron Kis. How about this? I have a student who's a professional saxophonist. And I was talking about this in Shir, and I asked him, would you use your saxophone? And by the way, saxophones are very hardy. They're pretty hardy. They're pretty strong. They're welded together, especially the professional ones. They're very strong. I asked him, would you use it as a paperweight? And he looked at me and said, of course not. Where does it stay? It stays in its box. Why? Because it's your professional tool. You don't want anything to happen to it. So that's a clear example where there's something that you're going to keep in a certain place because you don't want it to get injured or damaged. So that's in your brain. When you have something like that, you sort of push it away from your Shabbos use. That's being makta it. It becomes mukta machmas chisaron kis. Another example. Who here has a father who likes oranges? Grapefruits? Okay, let's say your father was a surgeon and he liked oranges. And he was in the, let's say he wasn't in the OR, but he was in the, you know, the prep room or whatever it is, the doctor's place where they rest between operations. And he had an orange. And he looks in his little lunch bag, and there's no knife there. Would he reach into his doctor bag and take out his scalpel and slice his orange? It slices very well, I hope. Why not? Because his concern for the value would be such that he would never use it for something other than what it's designated for. For $200, you're not going to cut an orange with a $200 knife. So that's a classic example, which is the same thing that the Rosh said, the sakin that the Mohel uses. Also, it's something that because of its value, you're scared to use it for any other use, even though it could. Knives aren't mukta. Knives are not mukta. But this particular knife you are very particular about, and that will make it mukta machmat chisaron kis. And therefore, if this scalpel was in your way, you can't move it. If this scalpel if you wanted to use it for a permitted use, you can't use it. If this scalpel was in danger of being stolen, you can't move it. All those things will be mukta, machmas chisaron kis. Let me just finish this one point. Let's say there's something that... Let me rephrase that. When we said that you're miyache makom, that you set or designate a place for it, that's just a good indicator. It could be, for example, like with a picture that hangs on a wall. The fact that you set a place for it to hang and it stays there for, you know, you probably have been living in your house, let's say, since you were a little person. And there might have been a painting hanging on that wall for all the years that you remember living in that house. It never moved from that place on the wall. I don't think the reason why we don't use that as a paperweight is because we're concerned for its value. I mean, it's just, you're not going to take it off the wall because you're not going to take it off the wall. If it's a very valuable painting that you would never move because of its value, that might make it Muktamach Mat Chisaron Kis. The fact that it's hanging in one set place and it has a designated location, the designated location itself does not make it into Muktamach Mat Chisaron Kis. It's just usually a good way of telling that that kind of thing is Muktamach Mat Chisaron Kis. For example, when you have a headache and you go to the doctor, that headache is not the sickness. That headache is a symptom that maybe there's something wrong with you. So too, when you're miyachin makom, when you set a certain place for an item, that's a good reason to assume that's going to be the kind of item that we are careful not to use for other uses. But that's not what makes a muksa. What makes a muksa is that you don't want to use it for any other use. Let me give one or two more examples, then we'll take some questions. Let's say you are a storekeeper, a store owner, and you sell sweaters. Now, are you allowed to move sweat Shabbos? Of course. We all wear sweaters on Shabbos. Except, if you're a storekeeper and your inventory is something that you have to be particular about your inventory. You don't use your inventory just, you know, somebody, you have a visitor and they're cold, you don't just say, oh, let me just go down to the basement, to the stock room and pull out what size are you? I'll just get you a sweater. No, if you did that every day, you wouldn't have a parnasa. So you're very careful about your merchandise. And therefore, even if it's a $19 sweater, even if it's a $12 sweater, since it's your merchandise, it's stock, it's inventory, you're particular about keeping it from getting ruined. You're not going to let your kids play around those boxes. You're not going to just take out those sweaters and wave them around. And even if you're cold, you probably wouldn't wear those sweaters. You'd go up two flights of stairs and go find your sweater from last season. You're not going to go just, even if it's more easily accessible, to get the sweater from your inventory. Why? Because this is your merchandise. So this is another classic example of a sweater. It's not expensive. It's not electronic. It doesn't necessarily have an exact location that you always keep it on, but this is a situation that you are careful about these things, not to use them for alternate uses because you're concerned for their value. As a store owner, all of your inventory has that din. And therefore, those sweaters would be mukta machmas chisaron kis. Of course, let's say you're a more chilled out store owner. You're not as professional about your business. And sometimes you take, let's say you have you sell plasticware, you sell, dishes, disposable dishes. And you have some extra guests, you want to get some pretty plates for these new people that came in. So you go dig into your merchandise. So that means in your store, you're not particular about your merchandise. And therefore, your merchandise will not be mukta machmat chisaron kis. But if you'd come to my house, I'm very particular about it. So my house, those plastic plates will be mukta machmat chisaron kis. Again, it'll be relative to the owner. If they are such a person who will use them for these items or not use them if they had to. One final example. Oh, I have a good example. Let's say you bought your father a tie for Father's Day. And based on the smile that he smiled or the snicker that he snickered when you handed it to him, you realize that it's not exactly his taste. So you want to return it. Why? Because why should you waste $15? Of course, it has a label that says 70, but we all know it costs $15. You don't want to waste your $15. You're going to take it back to, well, it says Brook Brothers, but really you got it at Daffy's, fine. And you're going to take it back to Daffy's and get yourself something that you want. So this $15 tie, it's not merchandise. It's not an expensive thing that you keep in one location, but you know that it's not going to be able to be returned if it looks used, if it's too disheveled, if it's too wrinkled, so you're going to have to keep it in good shape. So this is something that you would not use for an old, let's say your little brother again was bothering you, you would not tie his neck with this tie, even though it fits very well around that neck. Why? Because you want to be able to return it without it being disheveled. So therefore, that tie that you plan on returning, or any other things that you have that you want to return to the store, you bought a pair of shoes, and you want to return it to the store. So that pair of shoes is going to be mukta machmat chisaron kis, and those shoes, even though they're in your way, even though they are there's a cockroach that you want to kill with that shoe, and you bet they'll never be able to tell, because it's brown, the brown alligator skin shoe. It's still going to be mukta machmat chisaron kis. You can't use it for an alternate use. Those are returns, things you have not to so that they will be able to be returned are another category, another example, application of Mukta Machat Chisaron case. Questions? That is correct.
Okay, so something can be klisha machta iser, the heter, and mukta machna chasron kis.
Fine. So we'll take the most severe.
So always take the most severe.
If it's true. Okay, so let's go through them. We have klisha machta leheter is the most lenient.
You can move it
as long as it's a Torah, right? Klisha machta leiser, you can move only for an alternate use or for its location. So that's a little more severe. And Mukta Machmat Chisaron Kis, you can never move at all, so that's the most severe. So you have to treat it as a Mukta Machmat Chisaron Kis. Let's talk about a microscope, okay? No, let's talk about a saxophone, right? My student's saxophone. It's a Klisha Melachta L'Isser. It's an instrument that you play, and you're not allowed to play music on Shabbos, so that's a Klisha Melachta L'Isser. So if it was only that, let's say it wasn't an expensive, it was a cheap saxophone, it was only a problem of that I don't blow saxophones, play saxophones, so therefore I can't move it. Well, if it's in my way, I can move it, right? If I want to, I don't know, do something else with it, practice my breathing, my breathing, do some breathing exercises on it, that's an alternate use, that's Machmat Gufo, that would be okay. All of a sudden, it's an expensive saxophone that I don't want to, you know, use as a paperweight to just practice my breathing exercises. That's going to turn it into the more severe Mukta, and then I won't be able to move it for anything. Yes? So that's true. So lamps, the fact that it is always at your bedside doesn't make it mukta. It just might be symptomatic of the fact that you're keeping it in one place. Does that show that you really care about it for its value? I don't know if a lamp, maybe an antique lamp, yes, but a regular lamp, you don't want it to break. That's why you keep it in the same spot.
So like if it's something that you never moved because you never had a room, like let's say...
That does not make it mukta machat chisaron kis.
Right. Like you could decide on time, it's like I've never moved it before, but now I need to.
If you have an antique chair that's sort of...
Like a nice chair, but like, you generally...
Let's say you have a recliner. Let's say you have one of those recliners, a big recliner that you don't move around all the time. Like a big recliner that like goes back and forth, and the feet, you know, go up, and you can lean back, and it's in the corner of your living room. Now you figured out that the lights are out, and you want to move it closer to the windows so you could have better sunlight as you read. So you could move that. Even though it's a $3,000 chair. Why? Because you're not... You know, you're not careful about not using the chair for other uses. It's just, it's expensive, it's big, but I don't think it's delicate, or you're concerned with its value. So I don't think that would be mukta. I think that would be a klisha melachta leheter. It would be like a chair. It is a chair. Yes?
Okay, one more question about this. Like a cell phone, and I've like, asked this question before, and I know that a cell phone that you use as an alarm clock, you can move.
That is correct.
It's
a klisha melachta l'iser.
And heter.
Well, let's call it klisha melachta l'iser because it's primarily used to make phone calls, which is aser, and we follow the majority. And it's in your way because it's making noise not where I want it to make noise. I don't want it to be right near my bed at 6 o'clock on Shabbos morning.
So then, let's say it's a BlackBerry.
BlackBerry, same thing.
You
make life difficult. So if I have a BlackBerry that I'm very particular about, right, a brand new Android, super fancy iPhone, right? Brand new iPhone, and if you try to touch it, I will not be nice to you, okay? And I would never use it, I would never scratch my head with it, I would never, you know, use it as a paperweight. It's my iPhone, and it shall be my iPhone forevermore. And it's ringing at 6 o'clock in the morning, Shabbos morning. So because you are so particular about that, that's Mukta Machmat Chisaron Kis, and it's going to wake you up. That's tough. Yeah, that's going to be hard. I'd rather my featureless old-time phone that doesn't get email or anything else, and it's just a klisha melachta l'iser, and if it wakes me up in the morning, I can just lift it up with my hands and walk away with it. Somewhere else. Wake someone else up with it. Yes, any other questions? That is correct. Klisha melachta l'iser, that is in your way. It's in your way. Move it out of the way. Or you want to use it for alternate use, just use it for whatever alternate use. You do not have to do any other fancy manipulations with. Yeah. Right, I left my cell phone on the pillow by mistake, so I could just take my cell phone, lift it off, and put it wherever I want. We'll talk about buses afterwards. If you put it there by mistake, no. But buses will probably be next year, and that will probably be the last year on Hilchos Matzah. Yes? That's a great question, and this is very halacha l'maaseh, isn't it? Okay, so you went to Macy's because it's a Friday, one day Friday sale. And there are two beautiful outfits, and you know that one of them is just going to be more beautiful than the other. You just haven't decided which is that special one. So, because of the urgency of the matter, you decide to be a good sport and buy both. And of course, you know they have a good return policy. So you know you're taking one and you're going to return one. You just didn't decide which. So now, this is a tough question. And it probably happens more often than I think. Well, yeah, because if it's something that you want to return, you're going to be very careful not to get it ruined, because otherwise you won't be able to get your money back.
But you don't know if you want to return it. You do try it on.
Right, but you play a saxophone too. And you do bris mila with a mila knife, and you do surgery with your surgery knife. And that's what you're supposed to do with it. I would say it's hard to imagine if that's mukta. Meaning, if you don't know which one, so you're not. I don't know. It's a good question. Meaning, I'm sure if you wanted to wear it on Shabbos, you could wear it on Shabbos. Should you return it afterwards? That's a different question. But then again, they have a return policy, and they're not stupid. So, and by the way, they say that by evening wear, you can't like gowns, you can't return because they realize you might buy it for one event. And return it, right? Isn't that like bridal gowns and evening gowns? They say you can't return it because they realize you might just, you know, go to the prom with it and then just return it the next day. So they realize that. So I guess they're not machpids. I don't even think there's something wrong with if you keep it in perfect condition and keep all the labels on. So you have to make sure you go to Macy's and only buy things that have labels like on the inside of the shirt and not on the sleeve. You bought them already. You did the kinyanim, right? So you shouldn't be talking. Let me backtrack. Do you sing Zmiras on Shabbos? Okay. So there's a zemer that says, "V'hashena mishubachas kazal mishubas." Says, "Hirhurim mutarim." Hirhurim mutarim means even though you're not allowed to talk business on Shabbos, hirhurim to contemplate business. That's mutter. Okay? So hirhurim mutarim. L'shadeh chavonas. Do you know what that means? L'shadeh chavonas means if you want to set a dowry for your daughter, that is business. But since it's a tzorach mitzvah, it's also mutter. So hirhurim mutarim. You're not allowed to talk business, you're allowed to think business. L'shadeh chavonas, even though you're going to speak out the financial aspects of a wedding or a, you know, getting engaged or something like that, that is permitted because it's, even though it's financial, it's a tzarech mitzvah. But here, hirhurim mutarim, you're allowed to make financial decisions if you don't talk about them. So if you just happen to decide that this is the one I'm going to keep, so keep it to yourself and make the decision. And it's mutarim. Okay? Yes? I assume you're trying. Why are you trying them on? Again, this is going to be hard for me to understand because there's a certain, I guess, hana that women might have for just trying on clothes for no reason that I might not appreciate. So wear it. What could be wrong with that? I guess as long as you're trying them on to see which one you want to wear. So you're like, yeah. Okay. Anything else? Is Mukta Machmet Chisaron Kiss? Okay, just another few just general examples. Let's say you have any, basically I think good categories are, if you're a professional, you have specific tools for your profession, chances are, again, if they don't have to be expensive, but you have to be particular about that. If you're careful not to use your tools of trade for other stuff, whatever your trade is, that's probably Mukta Machmon Chisaron Kis. Documents, you mentioned a license, a driver's license, I would assume contracts, receipts, the same way you want to return the shoes, you also have to have the receipt. The receipt would be Mukta Machmon Chisaron Kis. Now that can be important, because where do you usually put the receipt? When you walk in Friday afternoon, coming in from Macy's just before, just enough time to throw something in the oven, get ready for Shabbos, and go to your meal, you put it on your desk or your dining room table. That's where you put the receipt, because you don't want to lose it. Then you come back Friday night after the meal, and it's not in a convenient place, either because you want to use that spot, or because it's going to get blown away from that spot. So neither of those are good enough ground to move it. So you need to make something a paperweight for that, right? Right. And by the way, are you allowed to move something that's not mukta for the sake of something that is mukta? Meaning, let's say I have a receipt that is mukta machmat chisaron kis, because I might want to return the shoes. So the receipt is mukta. Can I take a bottle of water, which is certainly not mukta, and put it on the paper as a paperweight, but the paper is mukta? So I'm using this, I'm handling this thing that's not mukta for the sake of something that is mukta. Is that permitted?
No.
You're just saying that because otherwise why would I ask the question?
You're making it a buses, but you're not like intentionally making something a bus, right? You're making that a buses.
I'm making the paper buses for water. There's nothing wrong with that. That's okay. And besides, it's only a bus if I did it on Erev Shabbos.
But it's non-Shabbos.
On Shabbos. The answer, I believe, is yes. I can move a kli, something that's mutter to you move on Shabbos, I can move it for whatever I want, even if it's to serve a mukta item. So can I take, let's say I have a camera that's a kli shem lachtu l'isser, and it's delicate, and it's, oh my gosh, it looks like it's going to rain. What should I do? I want to cover it over with a bowl or one of those Tupperware things on top of it. But wait, how can I move the Tupperware? Tupperware, of course, is not mukta. But can I move it to serve something that's mukta? The answer is yes, I can. I can't move my camera, even if it's going to rain and get ruined, because it's mukta. But I can move my Tupperware item, put it on top of the camera to protect it from the rain. Okay. Trade tools, documents. Of course, the classical chisaron kis is usually delicate electronics. Again, you can't give rules because those change with the generation and the people and your relative wealth, what you are careful about, what you are not particular about. Okay, so that's good for, I think we finished Mukta Machmat Chisaron Kis. If everybody wants to just, you can take these and you haven't done them yet. And now you can keep those, because we finished this topic, you can keep those sheets and you could review them for yourselves. It'll be quick reminders for yourselves. Just could you just pass it around. Now we're going to go to what I think is the most important part of Hilchos Muktzah. How are you allowed to move Hilchos Muktzah? Things that are Muktzah. What are the heterim, the leniencies? Now that we decided all the different categories of Muktzah, what did we talk about? We talked about Kli Shem Lach Tala Heter. We talked about Kli Shem Lach Tala Isser. We talked about Muktzah Machmas Gufo. We talked about Muktzah Machmas Isser. We talked about Muktzah Machmas Mius. We talked about number 6, Mukta Machmas Chisaron Kis. We had at least 6 categories of Mukta. Now, we saw some of them you can move here or there. But when you can't move it, what are alternate ways to, yes, move Mukta? So here we're going to have a few categories. I'm going to give you another sheet, if you have that sheet, that outlines when you can move Mukta. Now, I'm not going to use this sheet very extensively, because I don't like all the descriptions, and I don't necessarily use the same words, but this will be a good outline. So if you could pass them around, I'll tell you a few of the things that we'll talk about. We're going to talk about, could you move things that are mukta by blowing them? Right? The classic example where I think it's most appropriate is there's a bug on your body, there's a bug on your something, and you don't like bugs on your body or on other things. But bugs are mukta. What mukta are bugs? Who remembers what mukta category bugs fall under? Mios, that's true. What else could they fall under? Well, we talked about pets. Moksa Machmat Gufo, right. At least somebody was listening. It's okay. It's available online, yutor.org. So could I blow mukta out of the way? That we're going to talk about. That's one possible leniency. Another possible way, we could look at this chart if most people have the sheet. So on the top, it talks about, on the top right is neshifa, blowing. We'll talk about that. Tiltu kla'achar yad, I'm not going to use that phrase, but moving them with some, we'll have to explain what that means. A very important one is going to be tiltu min hatzad, indirect movements. The bottom we already talked about. Mukta l'tzarech gufo or l'tzarech makomo. Those two bottom categories only apply to a klisha. Klisha. Malachta l'iser. And then on the bottom of the page, there is to prevent the injury. What happens if there is broken glass? Broken glass is mukta machmas gufo. It's a broken item with no use. But it's very dangerous. If it gets your artery on your wrist, then you could, God forbid, die from blood loss. Or just general can make a cut. Number two is for Hefsid Maruba. We're not going to talk about that because those kinds of shahs you have to ask a Rav. Thirdly, for Kavod Habrios, we talked about certain examples where you could move things that are Muksa for Kavod Habrios. We said that Muksa Machmas Mios, things that are repulsive, you could move because of Kavod Habrios. And we also, I think we mentioned last week, another case where you could move mukta kavod habrios. In the olden days, they didn't use toilet paper to go to the bathroom. They used leaves or stones. We know leaves and stones and sticks are all mukta, machmas gufo. However, for human dignity, a person is able to wipe with those items, even though they're mukta. They weren't designated before Shabbos. They're completely mukta. But again, for human dignity, for kavod habrios. Number four is the same thing. It's to move things that are disgusting for the same reason of kavod habrios. And number five, we're not going to talk about because it's not really a halacha of muktzah to help sick people. So let's start. Let's talk about first moving muktzah with your body. We're going to call this tiltul, which is handling muktzah, moving muktzah, bigufo, with your body. So let me first tell you a story that happened to me 2 weeks ago and 2 days ago. That's 16 days ago, and you'll remember, and you'll understand why I remember exactly when it was. And then we'll go into the sources and the applications. Okay, so I went to the hospital Friday night at 3:30 in the morning, Friday night 2 weeks ago and 2 days ago. And when I went to the hospital on Friday night, I thought it would be important to have a credit card with me in case the hospital says, you know, we're not going to, you know, deliver your baby unless you, you know, you pay us a lot of money. And I didn't want to have problems, so I thought it would be important to have a credit card. And the credit card was in the bag that I was holding because I wanted to hold the rest of the bag and not just the credit card, so I had it in the bag. And for whatever reason, maybe I had a Sefer in the bag also, whatever, I don't remember the exact details were, but the credit card ended up on the seat, that, like one of the chairs in the delivery room. And we were being moved up to the, after my wife had our baby, we were moved up to the mother-baby floor, the other floor, where they, after you have the baby. So my credit card was sitting there on the chair. And I didn't want to leave my credit card there till after Shabbos. But it's mukta. What? How mukta is a credit card? What are my choices? Look at your sheets, your first sheet. So I don't think it's mukta machon chisaron kis. You know why? I would scratch my head with a credit card. You wouldn't scratch your head with, you wouldn't like, you know, scratch your arm with a credit card? Well, you wouldn't underline something, not like like regularly, but once in a while you wouldn't underline with it? I would. I think it's like money. It's mukta machmas gufo. There's no, it doesn't, it's not a tool. It's not a utensil with which I could perform an action. I mean, I could do wonderful things with it, don't get me wrong. We love credit cards, but it's not, I can't do something with it, with the physical body of the credit card. So I think it's mukta machmas gufo. Mukta machmas gufo. Even if I wanted to sit there, it's not like, it's not going to help because you don't have a heter of makomo for something that's mukta machmas gufo. An alternate use, well, it doesn't help either because of mukta machmas gufo. You can't move for an alternate use. What about to protect it? You can't move anything mukta to protect the mukta item. So what I did was, and yes, it did look awkward, but yes, I did make sure nobody was there to see. I picked it up with my teeth. I bent down. What? It wasn't easy. It wasn't easy. Thank you. That's what I was concerned about. But then again, I wasn't licking the floors. So I bent down and I grabbed the credit card with my teeth. And I took it with my teeth and I put it into the bag where all the other non-mukta items were. And that's how we use my credit cards. That will be the... I'm sorry, I go to Yatava. That will be the... Don't worry, I disinfected my mouth afterwards. I dipped it in boiling water for 35 seconds. Did you ever hear the Shaila? I got this. I actually got the Shaila for real last year. I thought it was a joke, but they meant it for real, about Erev Pesach, the person with braces. Right, do you have to do Haggalah? I thought it was a joke, but somebody actually asked me this last year. No, what was it? Something like that. Was it something about braces for Milchik Zemplashas? I don't remember for Pesach. Anyway, so... Tiltil begufo, moving mukta items with your body. There's a Mishnah. The Mishnah talks about the following scenario, and we're going to have to be very careful to understand this scenario because we're going to have two ways to understand it. The Mishnah says, imagine for yourself, before they had Sili Pastropedics, they had mattresses made out of straw. Now, picture a mattress made out of straw. Imagine, I don't know, there are two possibilities. Imagine it's just a box with like a sandbox with four sides with just straw in it. But I assume they had something better than that. I assume they had like a big bag, sort of like a bean bag. A big bag, and it's filled with straw. Now, what's the problem with a bean bag? When you want to lie down on it or sit on it? The problem is that it's not always configured. The beans are not always in the part of the bag that you need the bean bag to be. So if you have a mattress made out of straw, let's say all the straw is pushed to this side or to that side, and it's not equally distributed. So what do you want to do? You want to move it so that it will be comfortable for your back. Says the Mishnah in Maseches Shabbos, Kuf Mem Aleph, 141. Hakash, the straw, Sha'al Gabei Hamita, that's on top of the bed. Lo yina anenu biyado. You're not allowed to move the straw with your hands. Why? Because straw is Mukta Machlas Gufo. It's like a stick and a stone. Ella concludes the Mishnah. However, you can mina'ano bigufo, move it with your body. You're allowed to move the straw with your body. So from this Mishnah, it sounds like what? It sounds like you're allowed to move things that are mukta with your body. And that's what I did. I moved the credit card, which is also mukta machlas gufo, just like straw, with my body, with my teeth. Yes, question. Whenever there's a question of major financial loss, that's a shah that has to be asked by to a rav, because the parameters of a major financial loss are very complicated and very subjective. So there are no set rules about it, and all those shahs of preventing major financial loss usually have to be asked by to a rav first. So that's why I don't want to get into that. But not necessarily, because you always cancel it. So credit cards are better than money. Right, depends how quickly. Okay. So, we learned from this Mishnah that I'm allowed to move mukta with my body. Now, there's one very important thing to be aware of. When we say you're allowed to move mukta with your body, it's not just because... Let's rephrase that. Let's say I have this credit card that we just spoke about. Am I moving the credit card because I need the location? Nah, I wasn't sitting on that chair anymore. Am I using the credit card because I want to do something with it? No. I'm moving the credit card because I have one thing that I'm concerned with. The value of that credit card. To protect the credit card. And that's usually the most severe way, possibility of moving something that's mukta is to protect itself. However, if you use your body, you're even able to move mukta to protect the mukta. That's going to come into play. We'll see in a few minutes or the beginning of next time. That's going to be mukta. So let's see what the Shulchan Aruch says. Shulchan Aruch says in Hilchos Shabbos, Shin Yud Aleph, that's 311, Sif Ches, Tiltu Begufo, moving something with your body, Afilu Litzorech Davar HaAsur, even for moving something that is, even for the sake of something that's asr is permitted. We'll see why this is important again. It will come into play later. Hilkach, therefore, if there's straw on top of a bed, which is probably, you know, either useless or useless, the Shulchan Aruch says you probably have it designated for lighting on fire, which is certainly muktzah, you're allowed to move it with your body. So that Mishnah is paskened in the Shulchan Aruch. Now, based on that, the Mishnah Berurah says, let's say, and this is the most common application and most important heter, we might say, this whole series. Let's say it's something muktzah that's in your, that you don't want to be where it is. I don't care what kind of muktzah it is. Almost I don't care. I almost don't care. We'll see soon where there's one exception to this. I could take my foot and move anything that's muktzah. So, let's start talking about examples. The doorknob or the hinge or the door to my cabin falls on the floor. It's in the way. What should I do? Just kick it with your foot. The pen is on the floor. It doesn't look nice. So what should I do? It's muktzah. I can't move it. Move it with your foot. There's money. The baby might eat the penny that's on the floor. What should I do? Kick it under the desk. Everything that's on the floor, you just move with your foot and you're fine. All kinds of muktzah. Whenever you need to, for whatever purpose you want. With one exception, which we'll talk about later. Any questions about that? And that's going to be a very important kula? Yes. Excellent question. I was hoping you wouldn't ask me that. What happens if it's something that you normally move with your foot? Let's think of, what's an example of something that's muktzah that you usually move with your foot? Let's say, are you allowed to go skiing on Shabbos? Soccer balls? Now, soccer balls are a good question. I didn't want to get into this, but the Shulchan Aruch says balls are muktzah. The problem is that all the posts can say that talked about the balls in the time of the Shulchan Aruch 500 years ago, when a ball was just like a clump of earth or a clump of wood or a clump of something. But nowadays, when you could pay $40 for a manufactured bowl to have the exact texture and my dimensions and measurements, that's for a very specific use. In fact, we have some bowls that have this designated use and some for that, some for football and some for soccer and some for baseball and some for ping pong and some for tennis and some for every sport has its own ball. So that shows you they are very specifically designed. So all the postings say that nowadays bowls are not muktzah. They're not arguing with the Shulchan Aruch. They're just saying the Shulchan Aruch had a different kind of ball, so that's not a good example. One can make the argument. It probably won't be true in the end. Toys are hard to... You're saying something good, but it might not be usser. It's something to discuss. What's an example of something that I use with my foot that's muktzah? What? Rollerblades are muktzah? Who get rollerblades on Shabbos? Oh, come on, be honest.
Light up sneakers,
excellent, light up sneakers. Those are klelim shemlachtam le'isser, right? And I have a better example. How many of you wear light up sneakers? Okay, how many of you wear heels? What happens if your shoe with heels, the heel breaks? So that's muktzah. It's a broken kli, it's a kli that you can't use, it's broken. Assuming that it's not going to be wearable. So that's muktzah machmas gufo. And you usually use it with your shoe. So you're asking, can you move you're walking up the stairs into your house and the heel breaks as you walk into the house. And it's not comfortable to walk in, so you take it off right at the entrance to your house. Then you realize that there's a broken shoe at the entrance to your house and people are going to be walking in. Let's assume, I don't think that's a sakana. You know, it's not like broken glass. We'll talk about sakana later. So can I move this shoe with my... Well, of course, just move it with your foot. But you're saying, well, what do you mean? You always use it with move it with your foot. This specific case is actually a se'if in the Shulchan Aruch. I just don't remember what it says. It talks about a broken min'al. And what's the halacha with a broken min'al? A broken min'al... I believe is, yes, the Gemara in Kuf Yud Beis Amud Aleph asks your question. Asur l'taltel haminal al gabe gufa raglo. You're not allowed to move it with your foot. But I'm scared to get into that case because it's a little bit complicated. So let's assume don't move your feet. Don't kick things that are especially things that you kick. Or use it, let me rephrase that. Even though we're saying you could kick all kinds of muktzah, if something's muktzah, but you usually do use it with your feet, don't do it with your feet. But I'm not sure if that's really halacha ma'aseh, just being ma'achar. Yes. Yeah, but they're usually moved with your feet. You're right, you don't carry them with your feet, but usually you don't carry shoes, you usually wear them with your feet. Right here. Oh, excellent, that's a piece of exercise equipment. Let's assume, so you're being machmir, you're telling me that exercise equipment is muktzah. That could be. Okay. Let's say, okay, no, maybe we could even say that some exercise equipment is muktzah. You're not supposed to do exercise tam. Even if it's asa d'rabbanan, that's also enough to make a mukta kli shemlach tala iser. It's a kli shemlach tala iser. But a kli shemlach tala iser is not so terrible because you could move it if you need its location. Okay, but I have a solution. Let's say you have your exercise. You know those things that you put on one foot and you put the other. What is it? Not a weight. No, those like those rubber bands or those stretchy things, whatever they're called. So let's assume that that's muktzah. I don't know if it is, but let's assume it's kli shemlach tala iser. And I left it outside in my backyard. And it's going to rain, and that spring that goes zhum, 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 zhum is going to rust. So that's not moving it because I need its location. It's not in my way. If it would be in my living room, I need its location. If I wanted to hit somebody with it, I need it for an alternate use. But that's neither of those. I just don't want it to get rusty. So there, I'm not allowed to move it. It's a kli shemlach tala iser. To protect itself, I can't move it. So here, that would be an example. I guess I should not use my feet. I should use my elbows or lift it up with my teeth or my nose or any other part of your body that you could comfortably get it to wherever you want to get it to without your feet, perhaps, based on what you just said. Let's finish off today with one chumrah. I don't know if it's a chumrah that's halakha l'maisa, however, this whole idea of moving things with your body, which in my mind is the best and most important and most common way to move muktzah on Shabbos, there is a Chazon Ish who says that that's not permitted. Listen to how the Chazon Ish... But what do you mean? I thought it was a Mishnah. The Mishnah says that you can move the straw with your body. The straw, the straw matches with your body. So how can you argue on that? The Mishnah was written 2,000 years ago and the Chazon Ish lived 50 years ago in Bnei Brak. Listen to what the Chazon Ish says. Chazon Ish says, you're allowed to lie down on muktzah. You're allowed to do an action and it happens with your body, like, I don't know what, like yawn and happen to move muktzah. But you can't intentionally go with the plan of moving muktzah with a part of my body. That Mishnah that said that you could move the straw with your body, that's because you're not moving straw, you're lying down. You're lying down, and of course the straw will move, and you could lie down however you want to lie down. But that's not moving your goal. The Chazon Ish looks at your goal. If your goal is to do an act of lying down, so lie down however you want. But if your goal is to just move the muktzah, and take your elbows and move the muktzah, and take your knees and move the muktzah, and take your shoulders and move the muktzah, if your goal is to move the muktzah, that the Chazon Ish said is not okay. So if you're walking, and while you're walking, you happen to kick in that exercise thing that you wanted to move, okay, maybe that's okay, because that's not an action of, you know, moving muktzah with my foot. That's an act of walking. And it ends up that something moved with my foot. That the Chazon Ish would say okay. But the Chazon Ish says you should not purposely, intentionally, try to move muktzah with your body. So many poskim say you can. Chazon Ish says you can't. It's an issur d'rabbanan. So in a certain sense, it's a machlokes on a d'rabbanan. We'd often tend to be mako. However, Rav Moshe Feinstein has sort of a compromised position. Rav Moshe Feinstein suggests, it's not in Igros Moshe. I've mentioned before, Rabbi Bodner has a very wonderful English book on Hilchas Muktzah, which I've used for most of my organizing for this series. And in the back, he has a series of questions in Hilchas Muktzah that he presented to Rav Moshe Feinstein, and then another section that he presented questions to Rav Shlomo Zalman, Orbach. In the list of questions that Rabbi Bodner asks Rav Moshe, he asks him, in this terms of this machlokas, could you move your body to move mukta? Rav Moshe finds him said, try to avoid moving mukta with your body, unless it's a davar nachutz. What's a davar nachutz? Something that's important, something that's essential. If it's important, you could rely on those who are lenient and move it with your body. But otherwise, it's better to, I guess, if a person can, try to be machmir for the Chazon Ish, not to purposely use your body. So, let's say there's a penny on the floor and you're worried a baby's going to put it in his mouth. I think that's important. So therefore, I would take my foot and I would kick it underneath the desk. If there's a pen on the floor and it just doesn't look nice, so maybe I wouldn't be makel and kick it. I'm saying I would have until I saw the Chazon Ish 2 days ago. So now maybe I should try not to kick the pen out of the way because it's not really such an important need. If there is an important need, yes. If not an important need, no. And that's the conclusion of Moshe Feinstein. Be'ezus Hashem, next week, we will talk about another very significant way of moving mukta, which is called tiltum in hatzad, indirect movement of mukta, like shaking things that mukta is on and moving things with, you know, two steps removed, like taking a broom handle to move the mukta. That will be next week, and then we're going to learn how to clean our tables from all the mukta shells and pits that are on them. That will be next week.